Welcome once again to the Femme Fatale podcast. With me this week is Baby Vegas. Pneumonia-ridden, barely alive Baby Vegas. Wop, wow. We love his energy, love his enthusiasm, love his germs. Here he is. But first, a word. Children, it's not easy being the Femme Fatale. It's not even safe. I live in Hollywood just so I can bring you firsthand dish every week on this podcast and answer accurately and using the most plugged-in sources on earth your questions about what's really going on with celebrities and show business. But it's sunny out here, and it's a fact that the undead and people who just look like the undead have a terrible time in the sun. We cook like little sausages in our own skins out here, and I've been out here for more than a decade, and it's a wonder I don't look like Iggy Pop by now. But it's worth it because I bring you not only fresh info every week about the inner workings of Hollywood, but by risking a third-degree burn every time I step outside my bungalow, I am able to fetch you quite often blind items in cage matches, and we have one of each for you this week. That's right. Well, don't be ooh. You knew this.
I know.
Like, you're pretending that you're shocked, even though I asked you earlier, and you're like, yes, I will do this. A reader, by the way, go ahead and cough. It's realism. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it was laughter.
Okay, good. I mean, it's sort of a wheezing laughter. Right? Just don't die during my show. Or actually, that would be good for ratings. I leave it up to you. Plus, a reader wants me to free Superman from the legal version of a Krypton cage, and we'll see what we can do. But first, I have a fair warning for anyone hoping to appear as a contestant on The Voice. Via one of those cattle calls, you know, like they go to four cities or five cities every season, and you line up and you stand outside all day and you pay $20 for parking at the Staples Center, and you know, you get to audition, you know. Mm-hmm. You may not want to do that.
How degrading. They make you pay for parking.
Well, yeah, but that's the least of it. How do I know?
How do I know?
I'll tell you in a minute.
You're the fake.
Yeah, I am. Actually, let's do it right now.
All right.
Let's get to our VIP interview this week, okay? I don't know how many times over the course of my career I've been asked for tips on becoming a contestant on a singing competition show. I mean, who doesn't want to sing in front of Usher, Jennifer Lopez, or whatnot? Now, for the record, I was among the very first national journalists to cover American Idol.
Ooh.
Yeah, and just listening to the theme song now still gives me hives. This is back when the contestants were like free range.
Right.
And you could just walk up to them in the parking lot and ask them what they were smoking, literally. What are you smoking? So I know quite a bit about that world. You know, I've attended tapings of live shows, and they're not she though. You don't get up from your seat until like an officious little showrunner tells you can get up. It's very much like prison, but people are singing to you. I've interviewed.
So it's like Chicago.
It is like Chicago, but less sexy. And I've interviewed contestants and winners like Kelly Clarkson. I've done it all, but I've never had the inside scoop on what it's really like to be a contestant from the audition process on forward. But then I got lucky. Brandon Chase, the contestant who got buzzed by both Blake Shelton and CeeLo on The Voice last fall, eliminated in the knockout rounds. Did you watch that?
I did not.
He sang Wanted and Tiny Dancer. Yeah, that cutie. He's from Texas. He's from Arlington, Texas. I used to live around there. Very nice boys who live there.
Very nice.
They're very nice boys. And he's got a new single coming out. And I'm playing it for you, actually. I'm playing it for you right now. And he recently took a trip out to L.A. to do some talking to the media. You know, a talking. A jawing, as they say. In Texas. So I sat Brandon Chase down at the Paper or Plastic Cafe, which is right around the corner from my recording studio here in Los Angeles. And I asked him about his voice experience. Hint, you may want to consider skipping the cattle call after what he's about to tell you.
Girl, I've been knowing since the first time that you shot me with them blue eyes.
Brandon, welcome to the Femme Fatale podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How has your visit to Los Angeles been so far?
It's been great. You know, last time I was here was for The Voice, and I haven't been back since. And when I was here then, I couldn't leave the premise of the Courtyard Marriott in Burbank. So it's cool to be able to drive around and be able to
actually see the sun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. I wanted to talk to you about The Voice.
I know it's a little bit far back for you now. It was season 5, which is obviously long done. You're working on promoting your first single now, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Oh, it's going great. You know, that's why I'm actually here. I'm here for a radio tour here in California.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going really well. We released this song over a month ago, and just the response has been so overwhelming, and it's been just awesome to see the progress and how things are going so far through the single.
All right, so let's talk about The Voice. I understand that you were invited to audition. I don't think that's something that people really know happens.
Yeah, so, you know, they have, like, the cattle call, just like American Idol and America's Got Talent, all the other shows. But, you know, I think at the very end of it, before the blind audition, there was 140 that were there ready to audition. And out of that 140, I want to say there's only like 10 that actually went to a cattle call. All the rest got invited through one way or another. I got invited just really randomly. I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't actually even like wanting to participate in a singing reality show like that. But I got an email from them one day inviting me to a private audition in Houston. And you know, I live in Arlington, Texas. It's only about 4 hours from Houston, so decided, you know, just take the chance, see what happens, and you know, just kind of go from there and just kind of figure it all out on the way. And then, you know, after that audition in Houston, I got a callback for an LA audition. Then they sent me back home, kind of had to play the waiting game again to find out what was next. Got another callback, went back for executive callbacks, you know, in front of all the producers and and executives of the show, and then flew me back home again, and then that was like the worst waiting period, because that was like, you know, that was the final round. So if you got a callback, then you're going back for the actual auditions, and you know, finally got the call and went out to LA, and that's where I was in LA for about 3 months probably before the blind audition, just kind of preparing and training. You know, we had to do vocal lessons and stage rehearsals and
even before you even get to
like audition in front of the coaches. So like they had to pick your song, figure out what song it was going to be. You know, we had like 3 rehearsals with the band and then like 2 stage rehearsals. Then we had a stage coach teaching us like, you know, how to move. During that time, like we could go out, but going out was like going across the street.
All right.
Couldn't go beyond that, you know. So, and across the street there was nothing except like 4 restaurants that you could eat at. And so it was just, you're at the hotel, you're hanging out by the pool, hanging out in your room, or you're hanging out at one of the restaurants.
Were you under the impression that you'd have to go through all that before you audition for the 3 judges?
You know, not really. I thought it was just kind of plain and simple, you know, like you picked a song and then if you got picked to audition, then you would just kind of walk on stage and go. But there was so much behind the scenes stuff that had to go on before that.
And tell me about the process for picking your song when you first go on.
So they gave us like this list, this master list of like 300 songs. And then from that list, we had to number like our top 120 in order from 1 to 20. All
right.
And then I don't know, it's kind of weird. Like we did that and then they gave us like another list and that had like 100 songs on it. And we had to kind of do the same thing again. I guess it was kind of like, I don't know, maybe we didn't pick the songs they wanted us to pick.
Oh my God.
So they gave us like another list. I'm not really sure what happened, but we had to do that a couple times, and then they finally, basically out of that one of those lists of 1 to 20, they told us what we were going to audition with,
okay.
Whether that was your first pick or your 20th pick, and there was a few people that it actually wasn't even on their top 20, and I was lucky enough, it was my first pick, the one that I got to audition with, which was Wanted by Hunter Hayes, so it was a song that I had played tons and tons of times at a dance hall that I worked at in Texas. So it
that's
was
another kinda, little bit of
yeah. It was really just it was comfortable for me already. So
it's
a little step up.
So of you said 100 and something people who were there, like only 10 were from the cattle call.
Yeah, like pretty much everybody that I recall talking to, they're all invited for a private audition, and there was just very very few people that actually went through a cattle call.
And what's it like at a private audition? Is it Just like a couple people in an office or on a stage?
I mean, it's kind of... I don't know. I mean, it's like... When I went, there's quite a few people still because that's where they invite people from the cattle call to that as well. Because it's usually like the day after the cattle call.
Oh, okay, got it.
So it's like it's a combination of those people and then the people that they invite for a private audition. So I don't know. There was my audition was like in a studio, and so I don't know. There was like probably 10 people at the time that I was auditioning, and then they just kind of called us one by one and sent us into a room, and there was. Two of the casting people in the room, and then like a camera guy that was recording it all, and then like a sound guy that was capturing all the sound. And then as soon as that finished, if you got selected to kind of like move to the next kind of phase, you went to do like an interview with the lady and then fill out more paperwork. And if you didn't get selected for that, then they just kind of sent you on your way.
Rough.
Yeah. Rough. Yeah. So you kind of knew if you made it to that next round or not.
And how many interviews did they put you through during that time, too? I think that's something that you don't really realize is a challenge, you know?
Yeah. Honestly, like, after every single thing we did, we had an interview. After every rehearsal, after everything, we had interview. And, I mean, I don't know. Some aspects of it was like kind of annoying, but at the same time, it kind of helps you become more comfortable and better at being an interviewee, you know?
So, well, yeah, I mean, if you're going to...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of great experience, you know?
Now, you'd already sold 20,000 records.
Yeah,
I
sold about 20,000 units of my EP that I released about a year before The Voice. And
so what made you want to do this then? I mean, you could do it without them.
Yeah, you know, I was at this place where things were going well, but at the same time, like, I didn't really know what the next step in my career was. I kind of felt a little stuck in one place, and I don't know, just kind of at that same time, that's when I got the email for the private audition, and just the timing of it was really what kind of made it feel right, I think. And so just kind of decided, hey, like, I'm looking for that next step. Maybe this is it. So kind of went after it.
So would you do it again?
Yeah, I think I would definitely do it again. It was extremely stressful at times.
Really?
Just because of all the pressure and just all the uncertainty of it all. But it was really worth it. You know, it opened up. I know for sure it opened up a lot of doors. It didn't make anything happen by any means. I mean, you can't go on one of these shows and think that it's going to just all of a sudden make your career and just explode. There's still a ton of work to be done at the end of it. And it
helped. Talk to me about that a little bit. Like, you're finished with the show, you're done. How much of a bump did you see in recognition after that?
Yeah, so, you know, just being the very first episode on the show, I got a ton of new social media followers and that kind of thing. And, you know, it was an obvious, great step for my career. But, you know, at the end of the show, when it was over, those fans still stayed with me, and it was really great. But, you know, still, even with fans, you still have a lot of work to do, because if you don't have that recognition in the industry by, you know, the record promoters and the radio contacts and stuff, if you don't have, like, their kind of approval and stuff, you can't really move much in the industry, if that makes sense.
So you still need a good team. You still need
a
manager.
Yeah, absolutely.
You still need a publicist.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've been so blessed to have just the best surrounding me. You know, the best publicist and manager and radio promotion team that have just done an incredible job helping me really just pursue this dream with the best possible chance.
So is that your big advice for the person who's listening to my podcast who may want to audition for The Voice, is no matter what, keep engaging?
Yeah, definitely. Keep engaging with your fans. You know, it's when you get a new fan, like, send them a message, or if they send you a message, send a message back. Don't just favorite it or retweet it. Like, send a message back and thank them for their support and let them know new stuff is coming out and let them know that, you know, just kind of keep them in the loop of what's going on.
Brandon Chase interviewed live at the Paper or Plastic Cafe on Pico Boulevard. Thank you so much for joining the Femme Fatale
Thank
podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Baby, all I need is one. All I need is one.
And we're back. You know, I had
had no idea so many of the contestants on that show were invited to be on it and essentially pre-cast.
Oh.
Yeah, right. But those kids can sing, and I guess that's better than an hour's worth of William Hung's.
I suppose. But aren't there a lot of people on there, too, that have already been, known in some capacity?
Are you, like, vacuuming your hair? What are you doing in there? I can hear all this noise.
No, I hear all that noise as well.
It's not me. I didn't do it.
I'm just sitting here.
There's no, like, fan on you, like, making your... Because I know how much you love to have your hair blowing in the breeze, even when you're...
love that, but that is not happening.
Really? Maybe it's just your own hot air.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Well, are we ready to do a cage match?
I am ready.
All right. Now, you warned me. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, for those of you, we haven't done a cage match in a while, so let me just brief people on what it is. As you know, as much as I would like to strangle Baby Vegas sometimes with my bare hands, it's technically illegal in all 50 states. So instead, if I want to get out my pent-up rage, how can I do it? Well, we do a mock fight, and our weapons are celebrity sightings. He brings a celebrity sighting to the table. I bring a celebrity sighting to the table. And then, because my sound engineer isn't here today, I will just declare myself the winner. All right, so you go ahead.
Okay, well, I was at Coachella week in one.
Yes, I know.
Which is probably why I have pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And I saw not Leo, not the Biebs, not Beyonce.
Not Jared Leto.
Not Jared Leto, but my friend did see Jared Leto.
That doesn't count.
But the hunk that plays Sebastian on the Carrie Diaries.
Oh, God. Yes. Son.
I love that show, though, so it's very thrilling. He's just as HD in real life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here. That's okay. That's okay. If anybody cared about the Carrie Diaries, that would be okay. But let me tell you, I'm shopping at Whole Foods, kid. I'm shopping at Whole Foods because I'm doing that paleo thing. I'm getting my grass fed beef. I'm getting my sustainably raised chicken. I'm getting my farm fresh eggs, and I'm getting my paleo bacon courtesy of Peterson Farms. I'm getting all that stuff. I'm at that counter, and my man's there with me. Because he's there, and he looks over and he says, hey, look at that girl, like, you know, three people down from us at the, you know, in the butcher's line. And I look over, and it's kind of like the classic definition of a statuesque woman.
Ooh.
And I notice that she's dressed a lot like Katie Mixon's character on the late great Eastbound and Down, and that's because it was Katie Mixon from Eastbound and Down, which you never saw because you have no class.
I am Googling her right now.
It doesn't help. You can't get retroactive class.
I guess not.
But and you can. You can do me a favor, though. You can earn your stripes back.
All right.
Right? I want you to ask a reader question.
I will do my best.
All right.
Ready?
Yes.
All right. Robert Gervais via Facebook. Question. When will Superman and Friends enter public domain so someone else can make a movie?
All right. For the record, if everything were sane in the world, Superman would be in the public domain. In other words, anyone should be able to write a story about him or make a film or a comic or whatever because he was created so long ago. That's the way public domain is supposed to work. An original idea gets so old that anyone can use it, not just the people who created it or bought the rights to create with it.
Wow.
You know, typically individual authors, you know, used to be granted or are granted protection for their life plus an additional 50 years. That's an approach that's become the norm in Europe. It didn't used to be that way. It used to be like 20, 30 years or something after the creation of the work, and it's gradually gotten longer. But that's it. You know, we're not talking back in the day, we were not talking about 100 years. We were not talking about 90 years. That's how long we were talking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for works authored by corporations like a Hollywood blockbuster, a copyright term these days now may have been extended by Congress for about 75 years. But again, that hasn't always been the case. It used to be much shorter. So ergo, in case you're wondering, Shakespeare, Charles Dickens, Beethoven, they're all dead. But Macbeth, Oliver Twist, that's why every school can do Macbeth and not have to pay anything because it's that old.
Gotcha.
Right? It's from the Elizabethan era. You can't you know, protect something that's that old. Fifth Symphony, anybody can make hay out of those. If you want to go ahead and cover the Fifth Symphony, you go ahead with that. No one's going to come after you. Right?
Get it. Go for it.
The Charles Dickens estate, if you want to do something with Oliver Twist, Charles Dickens estate, assuming there is one, cannot come after you for any violations and then make you live in an alley and sell violets for a living or whatever Fagin would have you do. Put simply, in 1976, a law stretched the copyright protection maximum term from an already published for an already published work from 56 years to 75.
Mm-hmm.
But then that meant, by the way, if you did the math, that any work published between 1922 and 1941, right, aka the Supermanish era, mm-hmm. would have fallen into the public domain between 1978 and 1997. Mm. But then came Sonny Bono.
Oh.
Sonny Bono. Please
that
tell
me.
Yeah, I know. You know who he is, right?
Sonny and Cher.
Right. Short little dead guy, right? Also dead, but also somehow not gone.
Mm.
Nearly 16 years ago,
mm-hmm.
then President Clinton signed the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act.
Wow.
Which retroactively extended copyright protection. So as a result, great stuff like Gone with the Wind, Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, they were locked down for decades. In the case of Superman, this is the latest I was able to find. In 1998, the copyright was extended again by that Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act, extended to 95 years.
Whoa.
Right. Because rich people.
Ugh, rich people.
Right, rich people. So if you have like a story where you want to write about how he goes to Jupiter and has space sex with foxy fashion girls from Venus. No, no, no.
Damn, I'm going to have to put that back in the drawer.
And this is all, by the way, people may also want me to mention this because it is interesting. For years and years and years and years and years, there were court fights over who actually owned copyright to Superman. There were two original creators, and then they supposedly gave their rights away or sold their rights away to Action Comics at first, you know, in the DC. And then they sort of tried to reclaim it because some laws came into play that said you could reclaim the copyright. But Bush come to shove, circa 2013, it was all sort of settled that DC owns the copyright to Superman. By the way, my sound engineer is saying that it's Sonny Bono, not Bono.
Oh.
I kind
of... Oh!
Oh! Oh!
That's my Cher impersonation.
He's, you know what I love? Well, I won't say that. But yeah, okay, fine. Bono. But Bono means good. And this copyright thing is not good.
No.
So I just might say Bono for the hell of it. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, should I do my blind item?
You know, I got to tell you first that I came to discover Cher in the last couple months. I obviously knew she existed. She was very famous. But her latest album is amazing. And I'm very excited.
She has another album?
Oh, my God. It is phenomenal. She's like, hands up, dancing on the floor by myself. It's all about empowerment. And you're like, Cher, you're not dancing on the floor by yourself. But I appreciate that you are inspiring us.
It's better than hands up dancing on the floor with my walker.
Yeah, right. Plus, she's really easy to sing along to. Because you just gotta talk like this.
And I'm guessing that's your favorite song?
Yeah, that is definitely my favorite
song. And is it being played by all the kids in all the clubs?
Yeah, actually. Take it like a man.
Anything else you need to sing at this time?
No, I think I'm good.
You're sure?
Uh-huh.
Because we got time.
Whoa!
All right. Thank you. All right, are you ready for a blind item?
Please bring it.
All right. I recently spoke to someone who, I'm just going to put it this way. I'm trying to protect my source. But this person was one of the best friends of the person I'm about to speak about.
Ooh.
All right. I want to ask this in the form of a question. There is a very big pop star out there. I would say this pop star, among a certain generation, this pop star is a legend.
Oh.
This person is still alive, but you might call this pop star a legend. This pop star is alive. I would not say that this pop star is currently in his or her heyday, but I will say this pop star is working. Mm-hmm. And according to this source, who's I find to be very reliable, this pop star only has friend. If you're a friend of the pop star, you're on the payroll. This pop star does not have any friends who are not also on this pop star's payroll as an assistant or something.
That is so sad.
I think it's probably more typical than you think it is.
It's still so sad.
This pop star has tried to get friends outside of the payroll. Mm-hmm. It has just never worked out. The pop star is either too demanding or asks too much of those friends. And I don't want to say anything more than that. But essentially, anybody who's tried to be friends with this pop star is no longer friends with this pop star because of the pop star's behavior, not the friends.
Wow.
Yes. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
I guess I feel less sorry then. Sorry, pop star, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. That's about right. And speaking of sorry, not sorry, I'm out of here.
What?
Yeah, this has been another edition of my show, and I am on and up.
Yes.
Out. Yes.
I would also like to just offer a suggestion.
Please.
Everyone can please tweet at you in consent. There's a famous book called Save the Cat. It is for screenwriting.
Yes.
It's like this easy, quippy, quick book that tells you. It's very good and respected by all in the screenwriting business.
That's right.
How to write a screenplay. I believe that you should write a Save the Cat type book for how to be a journalist. I think you are the perfect contender for this, and the world will thank you.
I agree. Thank you.
So please do that.
I agree. Well, there is, until then, I will let you know, Baby Vegas, and this is not a setup at all, by the way. This is not something I asked for, people.
This isn't, I swear.
You volunteered this information.
Yes.
The second and updated edition of the A-List Playbook is coming out from Skyhorse Publishing, I believe, this fall. And here's what that means.
Ooh.
It is a complete compendium of every deep, dark secret I have learned about how stars really live.
Oh, my God.
How they pick their houses, how they move, how they travel, how they, quote, unquote, raise their children.
Oh, my God.
Everything you ever really wanted to know about how a star lives day to day, what they don't pay for, what they do pay for, how they get away with not paying for anything, how they get away with not paying for anything when they get married, et cetera, et cetera. It is all in this book. As a matter of fact, I think it's getting a new name.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as I know the new name, I will let my listeners know. But until then, know this.
Please.
It's coming from Skyhorse Publishing, Leslie Gornstein, yada, yada. That's about all you need to know right now. Right? Don't hurt yourself, son.
And that was,
I don't want to make you sick all over again.
I was pushing it,
right?
Right on the edge.
Well, thank you for joining me, even in your darkest hour of aching and fever and pain.
Well, thank you for having me. And it's very lonely being sick for days and days and days.
Well, please don't do anything stupid like go to your yoga dance, go-go, dodgeball stuff that you do.
I know. I'm waiting for the permission from my doctor.
And don't do it until then, because pneumonia, hey kids, public service, it can land you in the hospital. Don't mess around with it.
I really don't want to be there, so.
Well, then don't go dancing in places.
All right.
Save your Cher impression for when you're healthy.
Can't wait.
If you have a question for me, the Femme Fatale, you can tweet me at Femme Fatale Says. You can go to my website, www.thefemmefatale.com, and ask me a question via the feedback module. Or you can write to me directly at leslie@thefemmefatale.com. I am also on Facebook and Tumblr. As for you, how do they reach you, Baby Vegas?
They can find me, Baby Vegas with a Z, on Twitter.
Thank you so much. We will see you next week.